What's going on, everybody? It's your buddy, it's your pals, Pass Phoenix, the YWC Reality Check, here once again with NXT Rewind. Are we having fun with these? Haven't done one of these in a while, I am not going to lie. I know you guys aren't getting it today, but it is actually February 17th, the day that I'm recording this. We're about a week away from the Elimination Chamber in Australia. You guys will probably be getting this March 3rd if I put this in the can and send it out on the right date. But yeah, reason I'm mentioning that is this is the first one I've actually recorded in 2024, so it feels like a while, because the last ones you got from me were recorded well ahead of the times that you guys got them, so I haven't dipped into the NXT nostalgia pool in quite a bit, and it's really fun. We're in the middle of WrestleMania season at the moment. That's got its own thing. WrestleMania and WWE in general are just sort of hitting on all cylinders right now. But it does make you go back to when WWE wasn't so great, and at least we had proper black and gold NXT. As I said, it's NXT TakeOver London. It's December 16th, 2015, and we are live in the SSE Arena in London, England, with the Wikipedia, according to attendance, of 10,079 people in that SSE arena. Your commentators are Corey Graves, Byron Saxton, and I didn't write the third name down because I'm special. The two musical themes of the show tonight are Ace of Spades by Motorhead. I mean, this is very much Triple H era of NXT, so obviously you got some Motorhead in there, but also Could Have Been Me by the Struts, and I could be wrong. I feel like this was used more than once. You remember when they had the ECW brand for a while, and they used Let the Bodies Hit the Floor, not only as an ECW theme, but also as a Paul Heyman theme, and also they used it as a couple of pay-per-views as well, when you had the WWE vignettes back in the day with the My Sacrifice by Creed, and that was used by everything for a while. It feels like Could Have Been Me by the Could Have Been Me by the Struts was used a lot, and it's a lot of fun, and it ties into wrestling quite well. The pre-show, which was at this point just we're taping the next week's episode of NXT in this bigger arena to give it a different kind of feel. You had American Alpha winning a fatal four-way against Blake and Murphy, the Hype Bros and the Vaudevillains. You had Elias Sampson, back when he had two names, defeating Bull Dempsey when he was still a thing. And you had what I can only assume was a Canadian classic between Sami Zayn and Ty Dillinger, now Sean Spears, I suppose. The only thing really worth noting about this show, other than that, as far as my notes go, is it capped off the first ever UK tour for the NXT brand, and it was the only takeover, this is pretty obvious, I should point out, it was the only takeover to take place outside of North America. And if you ignore TakeOver Toronto 1 and 2, you could just say the only pay-per-view to take place outside of the US. Let's be real for a second. But speaking of the timeline of NXT takeovers, you've got London, which we're about to talk about. After that, you had Dallas over WrestleMania weekend, and then you had the end, or the end of the beginning, or, you know, whichever way you want to label that one, because it had multiple names, which marked the last pay-per-view, or the last takeover event to take place in Full Sail until they had to come back for COVID in 2020, and then that quickly got moved to the PC. So we're coming close to, I guess, a pretty historical thing. I mean, it'll be two pods from now. But when we do NXT TakeOver the End of the Beginning, it is the last intentional... It's the last intentional takeover to take place in Full Sail before they decided that TakeOver would be its own brand, and it would be an on-the-road brand, and then it would expand to NXT TakeOver UK, and it would expand to stuff like Worlds Collide and that sort of thing as well. But those did not take place in Full Sail, as I say, until the world caught a cold. We get another opening speech by Triple H, a spotlight speech, and it was short, sweet, and to the point. It's not as well remembered as the It Started With a Whisper speech that took place in Brooklyn, because that was iconic. But basically comes out, he says, you know, you guys wanted it and now you've got it. Just remember, this is your brand, so say it loud, say it proud. We are NXT. Now, It could be because of the layout of the building. It could be just because they're in a different place. It could be, quite frankly, the fact that they, because they were outside of North America, they had less or different production stuff. But the production of this was really low-key. The Titantron was a small Tron. This is back when TakeOver still had that black and white aesthetic where the ropes were white, everything else was black, the ring canvas was black. I miss the black ring canvas in NXT. That's one of the things they need to bring back, in my opinion. But this felt like a very big, small show. They didn't light up the crowd until the moments where it was appropriate, like a Finn Balor entrance, that type of thing. So you saw the first couple of rows, and then it was just darkness, and then all the focus, all the spotlights were in the ring. So it felt like a lot of people, like I say, 10,079 people came to see a very small, intimate show. And that's a really cool feeling. I'm not doing it any justice. I'm not explaining what I mean very well at all, but it was a really cool thing to note, even though I can't really explain it very well. Your first match of the night was Asuka versus Emma. Emma, at this point, had Dana Brooke in her corner. The women's division in NXT was one of the driving forces at this point, even though most people weren't paying it any mind. And because we were now fully into the era of, you know, the four horsewomen, Becky, Bayley, Charlotte, Sasha, were taking most of the headlines. And what kind of fell by the wayside was the other equal part of that was, I mean, let's be real, not so much Dana Brooke, but Emma, Asuka, Paige, people like that that were filling out the roles. I mean, even at this point, I think the Iconics were starting to come up as well, and Peyton Royce specifically, hella underutilized. Billy Kay, more of a mouthpiece than a wrestler, but we see what we get when we get there. But this was a great showcase for them. And like I'm going to do with a lot of the people on this, it's wild for me to do these NXT takeovers now just to see where everybody is. As I said, we're coming up to Elimination Chamber in Australia next week as I'm recording this right now. It'll be a week today, actually. But it does make you think of Emma, who's from Australia, who went out on Twitter and said, "Hey, guys, we're going to Australia." Oh, wait, never mind. They just fired me. I'm like, that fucking sucks. But Emma, I don't know what she's doing now, quite frankly. Dana Brooke is about to debut, literally, as I'm recording this, next week on TNA Impact. These are whole parts of sentences that you didn't think were going to happen not too long ago. But Ash by Elegance, which is the new Dana Brooke name, is debuting on TNA television on Impact next week. Not only that, cool little side note for me is she's being managed by George Iceman. Now, George Iceman is somebody that I've met and interacted with quite a bit because of how much time I spend at Destiny Wrestling shows, and Destiny Wrestling, as I've mentioned in the past, has a really close tie-in with TNA or Impact or however you want to refer to it. So seeing him as an on-screen character, as an on-screen manager, is fucking great. Now, Asuka, on the other side of the coin, is right in the middle of this whole splitting of damage control. Bayley's about to cash in her Royal Rumble win on Io Sky at WrestleMania, and Asuka's one of the women's tag team champions at the moment. So Emma, who knows, Dana's got a new direction. Asuka's awesome right where she is, as I say, in damage control. Now that damage control is just the three of them, her and Io and Kairi, it's awesome. And you see the beginnings of stuff like that here. Now on the way, lost my place now, which is terrible. Emma's heel entrance, by the way, rocked at this time, because it was a distorted version of when she had been a babyface, when she was like the awkward chick that couldn't quite dance, kind of looked like Elaine from Seinfeld and had all the bubbles in her entrance. Well, when they turned her heel, what's the simplest thing to do? You take that theme music and you distort it and turn it into something a little unsettling, which is what they did. Not so much in the case of people like Judgment Day. Now, I like Judgment Day's music, all the different entrances that they use, but a lot of them are not as good as the originals, and specifically I'm talking about Rhea Ripley and Finn Balor in that regard. Now, the story is about as cut and paste as you want to be. Asuka's brand new. Both of Emma and Dana Brooke had been trying to take shots at the new person because she's a big name and we're going to make a big name for ourselves by attacking this new big name, when really, realistically, it's like, hey, they're a big name. That'll help us. They disguise it under the guise of, hey, this is NXT and you're not welcome here. But really, it's like, hey, can we get some rub off your name? Because Kana came and quickly became Asuka, and we moved on from there. The UK crowd, in London is insane, as we know. When we get to the Bayley match, let's not even talk about that, but the Asuka's gonna kill you chants are ringing through this building before the match even starts. Asuka tries for some strikes, and Emma evades them in the early going, dipping out into the ropes, dipping out of the ring, etc. Both of them struggle for a suplex, and then both of them try to work the other one's arm. They trade hammerlocks for a long time. It's just, you know, hammerlock, transition into another hammerlock, transition into another hammerlock. In a way that almost looked like it was taking the piss out of the audience, and even if that is the case, I wouldn't have minded in the slightest, because the crowd was all over all of this, because it went from Asuka's gonna kill you to fuck her up, Asuka, fuck her up, which is awesome. There's a lot more profanity when they go to the UK, and I'm predicting when they slip over to Australia for Elimination Chamber, there might be some profanity there. Now, as funny as it is, I don't think you're going to get any Australians calling anybody a cunt, but watch some Jim Jefferies. Just watch some Jim Jefferies, and you will know how funny the word cunt can be coming from an Australian. Totally separate sidebar on that one. Back elbow by Emma, an armbar takedown by Asuka, a hip attack by Asuka off of the apron, basement dropkick by Emma, and a mud hole stomp in the corner. Another low dropkick and a near fall by Emma. Double arm rack by Emma, which is just, it's the only way I could describe it. It's when she's lying on the ground and she puts her feet on Asuka's shoulders and just yanks her arms straight up like a torture rack. Not a Lex Luger torture rack, like an actual medieval torture rack. Enough explanation on that one. She turns it very quickly. Asuka tries to get out of the rack, and she turns her attempt to get out of the rack into a pin attempt, which is nice. Face down full Nelson by Emma, grinding her face into the mat, which is always nice. Hip attacks and elbows by Asuka. A short lariat takedown by Emma, a missile dropkick by Asuka. They trade some strikes from their knees, showing the fatigue, showing the wear and tear of the match, which is nice. Series of kicks by Asuka. Asuka went with the, oh my god, we haven't done this one in a long ass time. Asuka went with the, say it with me, say it loud, say it proud, the Daniel Bryan silly kicks. Oh yes. Two back fists and a hip attack by Asuka. The Dilemma by Emma, which was basically, if you haven't seen it, it's her doing Tajiri's tarantula, except they had to do a pun out of it. I don't know that WWE does that. Butterfly suplex and a cannonball by Emma was gorgeous. Ankle lock by Asuka into a German suplex. There's a ref bump in the corner as Asuka tries to lock in the Asuka lock. They basically stumble into the referee, etc. Now, Dana tosses her a weapon. It looks like a choker. It looks like a choker with way too much metal on it. She takes it away from her. The ref turns around. Asuka gets caught with it herself and pleads her case to the referee. Dana gets ejected. Asuka tries to reach for the weapon, whatever it was, the choker thing. It gets kicked out of her hands. There's a spin kick from Asuka, and that's what gets the 1-2-3 for the win. It wasn't a hip attack. It wasn't the Asuka lock. It was this, no, by the way, you're not going to cheat. There goes your weapon. By the way, here, have a kick in the face. And by the way, I'm going to win the match. Asuka wins at 14 minutes and 49 seconds, and this was really good. This was something that they could learn from today, honestly, in the sense of, yes, Emma is out there, she's the heel, she's the cheating heel, she's got somebody out there to help her cheat, but that doesn't mean throughout the course of the match you can't present her as somebody who can in fact wrestle, who can in fact hold her own in the ring in the match before the cheating and the scheming means come out to play. I think this was done exceptionally. I think this was the closest they've ever come to using Emma to her full potential, going back as far as her original matches with Paige when they were first deciding the first NXT Women's Champion. From then on, I don't think anybody, and she's been used very, very well in TNA / Impact, I should say, but any company that I'll go as far as this, right? Now, they teamed her up with Madison Rayne in an awesome tag team in TNA, and that was a lot of fun, and they put a lot of stock into those tag team titles. WWE could learn something from that. But at this point, if you're WWE, if you're AEW, if you're TNA, if you're anybody else, don't put her on ROH. If you're anybody that has Tennille Dashwood / Emma on your roster and doesn't put her in the main title picture, you're doing it wrong. Now, as we quickly spin off from this match, we go to the crowd. There wasn't as many crowd shots this time around. Oh my God, look who's in the crowd. Look, we've got a dignitary in the audience. But because they were in the UK, and because he's a legendary figure in UK wrestling, I'm not going to pretend that I'm familiar. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you about stuff that I don't know. But Johnny Saint was in the front row, and he got more involved when the NXT UK brand was getting up off the ground. So nice to see him in the crowd, and, you know, nice things are nice. You know what else is nice? Anytime I get to talk about Enzo Amore, never mind the fact how fucking over Enzo Amore is and how stupid WWE is. Because the next match is the tag team champions Dash and Dawson defending against Enzo and Cass with Carmelo in their corner for the, for the tag team championships. Pretty simple story here as well. Dash and Dawson had recently tried to take out Big Cass's knee with the idea being that, oh, they're not just the throwback technician guys. They've got a real mean streak to them. And, oh man, Big Cass ain't so big when he's got a bad knee. That's about it. Now, they tried to go over this in a video package before the match. WWE, you know, one of my other cliches that I use in here way too much. Say it with me. Say it loud. Say it proud. WWE and NXT are really good at video packages. I'm doing the hand motions even though you can't see me. It's an audio platform. But the video didn't do what it was supposed to. It didn't promote the match, is the best way I can say it. All it was a highlight package of just how fucking over Enzo and Cass were. Enzo and Cass, the comparisons were always made between them and the New Age Outlaws, because it was virtually the same thing. You got one really animated, you know, sort of hype guy, who may not be the best guy in the ring, but charismatic as hell, got everybody to bite exactly when they were supposed to bite, and then some big guy to back him up. In this case, Big Cass, in the case of the New Age Outlaws, he was badass Billy Gunn, who's still wrestling. Good for him. And I mean, that sounded really condescending. I didn't mean it that way. But no, they were over as hell. And so you take an act like this that's over as hell, like Enzo and Cass was, and you put it in the middle of a UK audience, the all the elements were right. And once again, I gotta say, it makes you look at everybody in the ring and just say, holy shit, like, where is everybody now? Dash and Dawson are now FTR in AEW. Big Cass went through a whole lot of horrible personal shit, came out awesome on the other side. He's Big Bill over in AEW as well. Really happy for that guy. Really, really, I mean, I know I've said that before, but it really is, like, obviously the Revival were awesome. If AEW picked them up, they were going to do awesome Lee, because at one point AEW was really good at presenting tag team wrestling. So never really a worry about them, but when you heard about some of the personal stuff, and I'm not going to detail it here, because it's not my place to do, but some of the stuff that Big Cass came back from, and the dude's in the best shape of his life, the dude's a monster in the ring, and as Big Bale over in AEW, you gotta be happy for the guy, and that, like, that's beyond, like, what I think of WWE, what I think of AEW, or anything like that. Just, you know, really be, I don't think they're gonna put a title on him, I really don't, but as a pretty imposing, like, respected monster character, he's doing all right. Carmella, out of all of these people, out of Dash, Dawson, Big Cass, and Enzo, you would think Carmella's the only one left in WWE, but she is. She's had some problems in her life as well, but at the same time, she's hooked up with Corey Graves, and they're working on making a family, and that's fucking awesome. Corey Graves, somebody in his own right who started off as a wrestler in NXT, had to stop wrestling, and has made himself into one hell of a commentator, is now the play-by-play guy on SmackDown, which is going really great, in my personal opinion. So wish nothing but good for them. And Enzo, we know the story with Enzo. Enzo got fucked up the ass by the Me Too movement, even though he didn't do anything. And now he's coming back and he's doing music stuff. And I think he's doing indie dates now. So WWE dropped the ball. Oh yes, kind of like Disney with Johnny Depp. Anyways, but the match is what it is Clash of Styles, obviously big flamboyant characters versus, you know, tough old school wrestling guys. Enzo and Dawson start off the match with a stiff collar and elbow tie and a headlock by Dawson. Shoulder tackle and a pin attempt by Dawson and a tag to Dash. Enzo and Dash trade some shots of Bulldog by Enzo and a tag to Cass. Cass pounds the shit, capital letters, S-H-I-T, pounds the shit out of Dash in the corner. Dash goes for a clothesline and clotheslines the ring post. We have a story to tell now. Enzo works the arm. Cass continues to work the arm with an overhead key lock. They double team by Dash and Dawson and a double clothesline by Cass to get out of it. Cass tosses Enzo out of the ring at Dash and Dawson. I'm sorry. Anytime you have a little guy, big guy tag team, the spot that's always going to pop me is just use your partner as a projectile. Dash and Dawson hammerlock Enzo's arm into the turnbuckle, and then they trade off working on the arm. And again, another old cliche of mine. What's a story that I like? Everybody say it now. Anything you can do, I can do better. Oh, yes. Hammerlock suplex with a bridge by Dawson, still working on the arm, and Dash rides an armbar on the same arm. Drop kick and leg drops by Dawson and a slingshot suplex. Transition from an overhead key lock into an armbar, still working the same arm. Flying DDT by Enzo when he breaks away and is able to get to the top row. Hot tag to Cass, who hits everything that moves. Oh yes. Black hole slam by Cass. Dawson chops out the knee that they injured weeks before that started off the whole thing. So, we're doing this, we're doing arm for arm, we're telling this nice little arm for arm story, but hey, remember what we did to your leg? Well, go fuck your leg. Indian deathlock by Dash. Enzo crotches Dawson on the top rope. Big boot by Cass and the rocket launcher. They brawl to the outside, but when Enzo gets back on the inside of the ring, he's a victim of the shatter machine. I forget what they called it back then. It was the shatter machine at some point. And the Revival retain. The Revival keep their titles. The Revival get a huge booing from the UK crowd at 14 minutes, 57 seconds. Awesome match. I didn't appreciate the Revival at the time. I mean, I knew they were fantastic wrestlers, but obviously I'm drawn to an act. I mean, you guys know me. I'm a sarcastic asshole. I'm drawn to an act like Enzo and Cass, especially when they threw Carmella into the mix. And when they had the opening spiel, like the certified G bona fide stud, you can't teach that, and he's 7 feet tall and she's fucking gorgeous, and you can't teach that. Like, it's all Pavlov stuff with the crowd, and it's super easy. Let's be clear about that. It's super easy. Once you're over and once you know that the crowd is with you, whatever you're doing, I'm sorry, I'm not comparing the two, but it's like The Rock. I'm not comparing Enzo Amore to The Rock. I'm not. But The Rock went out in his rivalry with, I think it was John Cena, and he says, listen to these people. Like, these people are hanging on my every word. I bet I could get Cookie Puss trending. And he did. And Enzo knew that he had that crowd in the palm of his hand, and he didn't have to be a good wrestler, and what he said didn't have to make sense, as long as he did it his way, which should be this nice moral victory thing. But as I say, you know, Me Too came and bit him in the ass, and now that's one asset that WWE didn't get to utilize to its fullest extent. Even when they made him a cruiserweight champion, it was only under the auspice of, oh my god, look at this fucking asshole, I can't believe he's got a title. And then, you know, Neville came in, and that worked out swimmingly, did it not? That sounds like I'm taking a shot at Neville. I'm really not. Pac is awesome. A lot of fun. Obviously, the crowd in attendance would have liked to see Enzo and Cass win, but the disappointment in the loss does just as much to prove how much good Enzo and Cass were doing at the time. Not to undersell the contributions of Dash and Dawson, Revival, DIY, Dax and Cash, whatever you want to call them, as well. Great showcase for everybody involved, and even Carmella getting involved on the outside as the, what was she called at the time? The Princess of Staten Island. It was all good. Less can be said about the next match, because I feel bad saying that I wasn't really interested in this match, because I just do, because both of the guys are great. It's Baron Corbin versus Apollo Crews. Now, Apollo Crews has gone through several different gimmick changes and whatever, and none of them have made me believe for a second that WWE is ever going to consistently carry the guy. Now, the same thing could have been said up until very, very recently about Baron Corbin. I think Baron Corbin, in this era right here, the era that we're talking about, at this particular show even, where he's like sort of like the anti-indie guy. He's like the superstar in the roster full of wrestlers. It's a micro John Cena, CM Punk type situation, and he leaned into it pretty hard. That was great. I liked it at the time, and I like it now. He never got his flowers back then. He's getting his flowers now. I will say, Baron Corbin, right now, as we speak, as I'm recording this, not only one half of the Dusty Tag Team Cup winners with Bron Breakker, but just last week, they picked up those NXT Tag Team Championships from the family. Now, Bron Breakker, on the other hand, just got signed to SmackDown, so I don't know what that means for those titles, but for right now, today, in 2024, we are paying off the respect that this guy should have had, like, 8 years ago, because he wasn't the one to get cheered, he was the one to get everybody else cheered. And how did we get here? It was pretty damn simple. Cruz had a match against Balor. He had a championship opportunity, as WWE would say. Corbin cost him the match, so when Corbin had a match with Dillinger, Cruz cost him the match. And the whole idea was, happy-go-lucky Apollo Cruz has actually got an angry streak, which I'm sorry, but I don't believe for a second. I just don't. Corbin's awesome. Corbin's music is awesome, much like I said about Emma's earlier. And I like the Burn the Ships theme that he has now, because they're finally starting to find him a character that's a bit real. I like it. It suits him now. I still think his best entrance was this one where he had the spotlights that followed him down the ringside. And I will say, because this is retro and because I'm watching Baron Corbin on my TV now, looking back and seeing Baron Corbin with hair is really weird. Just saying. It's like the first time we saw Triple H after he shaved his head. It's just weird. Don't know what to think about that. But yeah, I would love to muster up some more enthusiasm for this match than what we get, but it was... Well, let's dive into it. There's a collar and elbow tie-up and a power game and a strong shoving match by Corbin in the early going, even though they were trying to push Apollo as a power guy. Shoulder tackle by Cruz and a corner spear to follow up. High knee by Corbin, snake eyes, headlock, shoulder tackle, standing drop kick by Cruz, who's tossed out by Corbin. And this is where you get into this anti-indie guy thing. He threw him over the top rope, actually, and they made it out. It was really badly shot, but they made it out like Cruz had hit his face on the steps on the way down, when literally you can just see his hands smacking the steps on the way down to make it more dramatic. But while he's laying there, Baron Corbin leaning over the top rope, "You should have stayed in Ring of Honor in those little gyms." That popped me. It made me smile. It makes me smile while I'm talking about it now. Hard Irish Whip in a corner clothesline by Corbin. Corner to corner, rake in the face by Corbin. Series of backbreakers and a backbreaker stretch by Corbin. Double leg by Cruz and a ground and pound and a tackle on the outside. Moonsault off the apron by Cruz. Deep six by Corbin. End of Days gets countered into an enziguri, but a second End of Days gets the win for Baron Corbin at 11 minutes and 40 seconds. As I say, nothing against Apollo Crews, and I really like Baron Corbin. I could not get into this. The crowd was into it, so I'm wickedly happy for them. I wish I was with them. As I just said, this match only went 11 minutes, and it felt longer, so that's not ideal, is it? We get a video package for Sami Zayn, to which I'm thinking, did I forget something? Is Sami Zayn on this card? No, because I just talked about the match that he had with Ty Dillinger on the pre-show. But I forgot that the pre-show was a taped episode for next week, and what they were announcing was Sami Zayn is returning next week, and then I have to do the backwards math in my head. This is around the time where he had his surprise appearance on Monday Night Raw, answering the John Cena United States Championship Open Challenge. And during his entrance, he basically used to do that whole, like, punch the air, raise the roof type thing. And he threw out his arm in his entrance, which was really sad. And you felt really bad for laughing, but Jesus Christ, that's not a good injury. There's no such thing as a good injury story, but damn. How'd you hurt yourself? I hurt myself before I even got to the ring. So this was him coming back from that. It was a big feel-good, oh my God, let's talk about what a great guy Sami Zayn is. Warm, heartfelt, old-school NXT, let's dig into him as a person type video package so that you can be happy for him when he gets back. And it's like, oh, he returns next week. Well, he didn't return the next week. He returned on the show that had already been taped during the kickoff. So it's a little bit of the NXT time machine. But it was nice. It was nice to see how happy NXT was to have Sami Zayn back. Because I will say, look at what he's gone on to do now. It hasn't always been sunshine and rainbows for Sami Zayn, but him and Kevin Owens, although I don't technically agree with it, technically Rhea Ripley should have had that night one main event, and I stick to that. That being my opinion and putting my opinion aside, the WrestleMania moment that he and Kevin Owens had beating the Usos for the Tag Team Championships in the main event of Night 1 of WrestleMania 39, fantastic. When you see this, this heartfelt vibe that was held for Sami Zayn all those years ago to that just happened last year, it is really good that WWE can still do good. Remember that when you're hearing all the bullshit about backstage and, oh, this terrible person did this and blah, 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 you shouldn't cheer WWE because of this and that. Remember that they can give you moments like this. And Sami Zayn's a good guy, and I've already said it once, but nice things are nice. On to more nice things. On to more nice things that were bad, or sorry, were nice back then, and nice things that are nice now. I can't put my words together. This is terrible. Bayley. I'm talking about Bayley. Bayley just turned face, what, last week, 2 weeks ago? Because Damage Control turned more heel on her, and she was already heel, and they were already heel. But, you know, wrestling math. But back then, you had smiley, huggy, side ponytail, babyface Bayley, who was still in the early days of her NXT Women's Championship reign, and was just coming off what we talked about in the last NXT Rewind podcast, which was the Iron Woman match between herself and Sasha Banks at NXT TakeOver Respect. She'd had a couple of title defenses since then. At the same amount of time, Nia Jax had just debuted, and Nia Jax got involved in a title match between her and Eva Marie, who everybody loved Eva Marie and gave her a fair shot in NXT, didn't they? Didn't they? No, they didn't. Not at all. So she got involved in that match and then just started harassing and beating the shit out of Bayley, and Bayley went on to... The video package for this is Bayley reading this essay she had written when she was like 11 about how she was going to grow up and be a wrestler. And the video package ends off with, you know, I decided around here that, you know, respect isn't deserved, it's earned. And then you got Nia Jax, who's basically eating her lunch. I mean, the comparisons between now and then are pretty damn simple. She's the champion here, and coming up very, very shortly, she's got a WrestleMania moment with Io Sky to maybe perchance become a champion again. I don't know. Jax is, in about a week, definitely not winning the women's world title from Rhea Ripley, because it's Rhea Ripley and it's going to be in Australia, and that's just not a thing that's going to happen, and we want Becky Lynch and the whole thing about that. Thing about that is, I'm talking about what we have coming up because it's the time that I'm recording it, but all of this will have happened by now, so I could very well be wrong. We could all be very sad and Nia Jax could be holding a title in the WWE, which is bad, but... It's Bayley versus Nia Jax, and Nia Jax, you kind of know what you're going to get from a Nia Jax match. And Bayley, I said this before, I said this with Enzo and Cass, and I'm going to say it again here with Bayley. It was the same thing with Asuka in the opening match as well, but holy Christ, that soccer chant style of interaction that the UK fans do, the hey, Bayley, ooh, ah, that whole thing, I'm not going to do it anymore and embarrass myself in an audio platform. But it's not that they do it, and it's not that they do it a lot. It's how loudly and how intensely and how much they prolong it throughout the match. It's like... It's like, we're Bayley fans, and we're here to support Bayley, and we're not going anywhere. Like, there's that element to it. And I think that's really cool for a character that was so laid back and pleasant and babyface back in the day. For the fans to have her back like that was really, really cool. Bayley's always been perceived or projected by the company as being one step behind, which really sucks. Even as far as, like, when they got called up to the main roster, she was the one that was held back, and the other three got to fly. So I think that contributes to it a whole lot. As I say, as respectfully as I possibly can, it's a Nia Jax match. You have to adjust your expectations a little bit. Jax moves Bayley around the ring, and Bayley tries her best to move herself around Nia Jax. Strikes in the corner a few times by Bayley. A gutbuster by Jax. A Cobra Clutch where she whips her around by the head for a bit is kind of cool, I guess. Backpack dragon style sleeper by Bayley, followed by some corner elbows. Bayley kicks out the knees and hits her in the chest and in the face with flying elbows, one after another after another. How can you possibly topple this redwood? I could hear an old school announcer saying, but it doesn't work. Triangle choke by Bayley at one point is pretty cool, followed by a swanton bomb. Jax chucks Bayley out of the ring and hits three Samoan drops on her when she gets back in the ring. Corner avalanche in the corner because Jax is big and she can just squish you a bunch. Tosses Bayley across the ring. Leg drop to the back of the head by Jax three times. Guillotine choke by Bayley. Bayley gets slammed out of the guillotine choke twice. Third time stays, they kind of collapse into a heap. Nia Jax does an awkward little tap out thing, and Bayley gets the win at 13-17. Bayley deserves the world for trying to make this match into something. And I know that sounds like I'm digging at Nia Jax, but she's not good. I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm just not. The only thing she has is, I can put you in the corner and I can squish you, or I can put you on the ground and I can squish you. And if you're significantly smaller than me, I might be able to throw you around. That's it. Which means anybody she wrestles is gonna have to wrestle, do the wrestling around her. And Bayley, who, like I say, was just still in the early months of her title reign, I don't think it was that fair of them to have to put her, like, put that responsibility on her shoulders, because you're going to break her shoulders. That's not nice at all. The atmosphere and the crowd being as behind her as they were, and commentary were busting their balls to try and make this into something, and Bayley wanted to make this into something, and Jax wasn't as terrible as she's been in other things, is the nicer way for me to put it. It's an achievement that it didn't suck, but it wasn't good. It was an atmosphere thing. The crowd that wanted to see Bayley got to see Bayley, and take the crowd and Bayley relationship meant more than the Bayley Jax match. And I think they did that kind of intentionally. They let it linger after the match was over so that the chance could get going again. And I don't know. I'm trying to find ways to say nice things about this that just wasn't that nice. And I think they kind of put Bayley in an impossible spot. So I commend her efforts in something that was kind of doomed to fail. I'm not going to lie. If you were in the audience, if anybody was in the audience, they probably had a great time because they got to see Bayley and cheer for Bayley and be part of that rabid crowd that loves Bayley. So, did it achieve what it was meant to achieve on that level? Sure. Absolutely. Happy for Bayley. Happy for Bayley for what she has right now. How Nia Jax has a title shot coming up in a week in a stadium show in Australia. Breaks my goddamn brain. But let's talk about more awesome shit instead. Let's talk about Samoa Joe going after the current NXT champion, Finn Balor. Now, I'm going to say what I always say. I hate this iteration of the NXT championship. It looks like a cube, and it's ugly. It looks ugly. We got this one. We got the really, really good one. And then they have what they have now, which is the really, really good one that, like, got rainbow jizzed on, which is not ideal. But I hate this belt. it's awkward looking, and it was only by going back and doing this series. I mean, to be fair, the championship belt that Bayley was carrying in the last match, the one that was like a little bit pink and like jeweled up and whatever, like a little bit of a remnant of the Divas era, isn't ideal either. Like the version that came just after that of both of these belts, way, way, way better. And it is distracting because it's so plain. And with the big X being the focus of it, obviously because it's NXT, even at the time, it made me think, like, oh, that's TNA's X Division. Because that's what their belts look like with the big X in the middle. And the ones now still have the big X in the middle, but there's some belt around it. That's, I don't know. I don't know what else you want me to say. Excuse me. Again, this is another really cool one to say, like, you know, this is where they were, where are they now? I mean, Samoa Joe is the current AEW World Champion. So what could you want? He beat MJF. MJF's injured. We hope he's doing well, etc. Now Samoa Joe has to carry Hangman Page to an interesting match. Probably today, as you're hearing this. I won't be watching, because I will... The day this goes out, I'm going to a Destiny show. That's another awesome thing that I'm trying to line up in the proper way, where El Diablo, Gabriel Fuerza, is taking on Mustafa Ali. So that's going to be a lot of fun, because I'm not watching AEW. Oh, yes. But Joe is the current AEW champion. Joe continues to be one of the only watchable things on that show. And Finn Balor is part of the coolest faction in WWE right now, being the Judgment Day. And he's still, at this time of recording, one half of the WWE Undisputed Tag Team Champions, along with Damian Priest, who's also the Money in the Bank briefcase holder. So... they're doing all right for themselves, aren't they? Oh, NXT didn't make any stars. Fuck off. Finn Balor not only comes out as the Demon, but comes out as a Jack the Ripper version of the Demon, which is just awesome. Like, the little tiny thoughts and things that used to go into NXT stuff. I like current NXT. I like that they're going back on the road. I like that I'm going to be going to Heatwave during Money in the Bank weekend when it comes here in July. But there are some like little cool details like this that get left by the wayside. Trip by Joe to start off the match, and he powers Balor into the corner. Both men trade some kicks, and Joe bails, and there's a dive by Balor. Running punt kick on the apron by Balor as Joe tries to get away. Chops by Balor, and a John Woo drop kick into the steel steps. Please tell me why it's called a John Woo drop kick, because that's something I'm a little bit ignorant on. Uranagi on the floor by Joe, elbows and corner strikes. Corner tackle and a corner enziguri by Joe. Both men trade punches, and my writing is absolutely terrible. Both men trade punches, and there's a back elbow takedown by Joe to break that up. Neck vice by Joe, and a chop to the back, and a kick to the chest. Jabs in the corner by Joe, and boot washes to the face. And how? It's like, when he does the boot wash to the face, it's like the what is it, the Zack Ryder used to do, the broski boot, except if the broski boot was going to kill you. Over the ropes, enziguri by Balor, suicide dive by Joe, here's a cool sequence by Samoa Joe. He powerbombs him, doesn't release, turns over into a Boston Crab, doesn't release, turns that over into a crossface, turns that over into a double armbar. So, I'm going to smash you into the ground, and then I'm going to break every piece of you individually. And Joe, more than anybody I can think of in the current day, nobody looks like they're having more fun hurting somebody than Samoa Joe. And that's the menacing that came out of that was always on par. That's why him on commentary, while he was good at it, was also kind of eh. DDT by Balor, chops forearms in a jumping clothesline. Balor enziguris Joe off of the top rope to the floor and then hits him with a suicide dive. Double stomp to the back of the head by Joe. Doesn't look that great. Sent on by Joe, Muscle Buster gets blocked by Balor, a Pele kick by Balor, they trade some jabs, they trade some forearms, Kikita clutch by Joe, Balor rolls through the Kikita clutch, turns it into a double stomp, hits a sling bait, hits 3 drop kicks. Then they battle on the top rope for a little while. Joe gets tossed off, eats the coup de grace. Balor wins. He's still your champion, even though all his paint is washed off at this point and he can't fucking stand at 18 minutes and 22 seconds. Not only was the match great, not only was there medical people there, like, trying to check on Joe while the fake security guards were like, no, Joe, you have to leave. So they were trying to play off this thing where he had to be removed from the ring because he was so pissed off. But at the same time, actual medical staff were, like, trying to get a view of how he was. Same thing happened with Finn Balor when he went to step out of the ring and people at the side of the ring told him, no, sit down. And then you could kind of see when he goes back to the center to hold up the belt while his music is still playing and he's still trying to wave his arms at the appropriate time to the music, but he's a little glassed over. So I haven't really looked into how actually messed up either of these guys were at the end of the match, whether they were and they were being taken care of, which is great, or whether their acting was just that good in this particular moment, which is also spectacular. Either way you came out of this, like, you can never feel what a wrestler feels in a match, but you can get into a match to a point where you're tired with them, if that makes any sense at all. This was a fun show. I know I've been down on a couple of things. The Cruz Corbin match, I wish I was more into, and I wish Bayley had a better opponent for a match that I could get into. But even those serve their purpose. It gives me a chance to look back on somebody like Corbin, who was incredibly underappreciated, and appreciate what he was doing at the time. The carry job that Bayley did was a different way of acknowledging how awesome she is. Asuka and Emma was an excellent example of where their women's division was at the time. Same thing goes for the tag title match. Dash and Dawson were giving you an example of what exactly they were going to be, and Enzo and Cass was a missed opportunity because woke nonsense kind of ruined that shit. And I mean, Samoa Joe, I don't care. I don't care whether they do this in ROH, whether they do this in AEW, whether they do this in TNA, whether they do this in WWE, whether they do it at WrestleMania. You give me Samoa Joe and Finn Balor in a match where they can just let loose and go and throw a title in the mix. It can't be bad. It just can't. I still hope that Balor gets himself into the title picture. This makes me want that more, but I want it for the current, like, dickhead Judgment Day version of Finn Balor. We got big names at the top right now. We've got the fucking Rock right now, but we've got Roman and Cody and Drew and Punk's back, which is awesome, and Cody and Seth and all those names to contend with, but when the dust settles and when people who are injured can go deal with their injuries, like a Punk, like a Seth Rollins, when The Rock finally leaves again, which is going to happen, let's be real for a second. I like The Rock, but he'll leave again. Balor's somebody you got to get in that mix eventually. And if you watch this match and you can't see that, then I don't know what to tell you. Anyways, this has been a lot of fun. As I say, as a whole, going over to the UK, the UK crowd was one of the stories of this pay-per-view. This is a different show if they're not in that hotbed UK crowd. And makes me wish they had done it a bit more, honestly. We saw the same thing at Money in the Bank just this past year. You're going to get Money in the Bank up here in Canada this year, and we're bizarro land, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, lots of fun. Not everything was perfect. I really do like these. It does put me in sort of a nostalgic, contemplative, retro mood where I kind of trail off and don't know how to finish my sentences properly. I hope you guys are enjoying this series as well. If you are, please don't be shy about sharing it. I need all the eyes on it that I can. That's me being as blunt as I can. I've been Spaz, your YWC Reality Check. Subscribe up there, talk down there, start a conversation. Keep all these conversations going. Don't be a stranger. I will talk to each and every last one of you later, but for right now, I am tagging it. Bye, guys.